si estás aburrido.
I'm bored.
Si te acabaste de levantar. Si andas en el tráfico. Si estás haciendo tu ejercicio diario.
Si
necesitas algo fresh. Escucha, este podcast live te hace que te suba la nota y te pongas activo y más fuerte que nunca. Así que tú sabes lo que tienes que hacer. Todos los martes a las 5, el podcast live por Instagram y por el Facebook Live. Así que no te lo pierdas. John y Johnson son para treparte la nota y con la pavera encima. Uy, oye. Episodio número 22, mi gente, de Spotify y Apple Podcast. Así que, oye, estamos bien duros sonando. Así que hoy venimos con un tema exclusivo de lucha libre, de lucha libre, MMA y todo.
Un poquito de todo ahí, un poquito de actuación, ya tú sabes. Este tipo de verdad que tiene unas variaciones de lo que es de su talento.
Oye, sí, además, el tipo está duro, duro, duro. Oye, en todo tipo de lucha técnica, wrestling, olvídate.
De todo, versátil. El versátil en lo que es en la pelea, artes marciales.
Y este podcast, oye, inglés, portugués y en español. Así que, oye, tres lenguajes para que tú sepas. El que no sepa, olvídate, vamos a hablar de todo aquí, así que...
Our English is very good looking, ya tú sabes. Así que estamos aquí, estamos activos y le vamos con todo.
Pues vamos con todo, oye, el nombre de Fernando Marrero, oye, va contando toda su historia, su trayectoria junto con nosotros, los de la J Plus. Así que ya saben cómo conseguirnos en todas las redes sociales, bajo los de la J Instagram. Oye, mi gente, también, oye, Giovanni Pizza, la mejor pizza, así que ya tú sabes, como siempre, aquí auspiciando bien duro. Así que recuerda seguir a Giovanni Pizza, que también tiene su Instagram, John C, ya tú sabes cómo es. Y, oye, ya mismo nos vamos live.
Nos fuimos live
ahora mismo, ya tú sabes. Oye, la música de fondo de Melody Kid. Así que, oye, estamos aquí live. Empezamos live podcast Instagram. Así que, mi gente, vamos acomodando nuestros asientos. Y la gente que nos está escuchando también, acomódase, prende la cervecita, el vinito, que nos vamos a ir duro ahora mismo. Vamos, ya tú duro, sabes.
Ya tú sabes, busquen los popcorns, ya tú sabes, Alcapurria, Budweiser, ya los veo, están activos, activando. Estamos aquí, esto va a ser un poco diferente hoy.
Oye, dímelo, Alfa. Oye, Alfa siempre está activo con nosotros y ya tú sabes, ya mismo va a estar con nosotros en agosto, así que prepárate, papi, que vamos a estar aquí activados.
Uy.
Así que, oye, a la gente, ya mismo se conecta la gente, un poquito tal niño, así que, pero vamos a estar ready. Venimos con un luchador de wrestling y... ha hecho boxeo,
MMA, Mixed Martial Arts, Jiu Jitsu. ¿Qué no ha hecho el tipo?
Oye, también fue, oye, también perteneció a la milicia.
Casi francotirador.
Militar, así que, oye.
Mucho respeto, No. Ese tipo ha hecho mucho nombre. Ha llevado su apellido en todos lados. Se llama Marrero. Fernando Marrero, ya tú sabes.
Fernando Marrero. Oye, también, oye, un poquito va a estar este podcast, va a salir en inglés, portugués y español, para que sepan. Va a hablar un poco de portugués. Él habla un poco de portugués, así que, pero vamos a estar aquí encendido con él ya mismo, así que no se despeguen. Oye, como siempre también, oye, las promociones de J&J, Janitorial Service, que siempre están con nosotros, esa gente que siempre están limpiando de todo tipo de casas, hogares, olvídate.
Sí, limpian de todo. El número es 714-805-0154.
Así que ya tú sabes. Oye, también, oye, quiero decirle a la gente que también nos está enviando saludos por diferentes medios sociales, que también tenemos nuestro email, es un email oficial, que es el que se usa para trabajo, así que para que ahí nos manden de toda la información, la gente que nos quiere entrevistar, que siempre nos están sintonizando, gente que de todos lados nos están escribiendo, que quieren ser, que quieren que nosotros los entrevistemos. Tenemos agenda llena, acuérdate que nosotros lo hacemos todos los martes a las 5 horas de California y a las 8 horas de PM de Puerto Rico y lo hacemos todos los martes. Si pudiéramos hacerlo todos los días, lo hacemos todos los días, solamente hacemos especiales.
Tenemos un par de especiales por ahí, así que...
Tenemos un par de especial que viene ahora en esta fecha de agosto. Vamos a hacer dos podcasts que pues...
Back to back.
Así que ya tú sabes, eso pendiente, viene siendo pendiente. Martes y miércoles. Así que pendiente a eso, que venimos encendidos. Así que, oye.
Y para las personas que quieren que nosotros le demos un shout out promo, más promo que nada, ya tú sabes, pueden contactarse al número 714-657-5243. El número de los de la J, ya tú sabes. Estamos aquí encendidos for promotion purposes only.
Diablo,
you know what I'm saying?
Te tiraste ahí. El boceteo. Así que, oye, vamos ya mismo a estar con Fernando Marrero. Así que ya mismo va a estar enviando el request. Oye, John C va a estar aquí hablando toda la entrevista. Hoy John C es el protagonista y yo soy el artista. Y vamos a estar... Él es el traductor. Él va a estar haciendo la entrevista en inglés. Y yo voy a estar haciendo la entrevista en portugués. Un poco de portugués, porque no sé si él ha hablado... fluyen portugués, pero vamos a intentar hablar un poco.
Portugués.
Vamos a estar hablando un poco portugués y ya tú sabes. Y el español para la gente que está aquí y gente latina aquí, así que yo voy a traducir un poco, así que ya tú sabes cómo.
Y acuérdense en seguirnos en YouTube, mi gente. Este episodio sale mañana en YouTube, Spotify, Anchor, todos los podcasts, ¿ok?
Así que ya tú sabes. Vamos encendido. Así que un aplauso, un aplausillo. Y entró.
Ya entró. Vamos a ver.
Fernando Marrero.
Fernando Marrero. Ya por ahí viene.
Ya viene por ahí.
Viene por ahí, ya.
Estamos localizándolo. Enviamos el request. Para que lo saban. Así. Fernando Marrero viene por ahí. Vamos a estar haciendo una par de técnicas. ¡Ey! ¡Ey! Yo.
¿Qué pasa, man? Oh, snap.
Representing
hard para la cultura, ya tú sabes. Can you hear us? We can't hear you. Is the phone plugged in? Oh, there you go. Say
there
something.
There you go.
You hear me?
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Fernando Marrero.
Again. Like.
Woo! Yo. It's been a long time, brother. What is good in the hood, my man?
What's good with it, man? How you guys doing? I appreciate you guys for having me on.
Of course. It's about time, man. It's been a long time. You've been in talks. You've been waiting for weeks. And here we are with the grand Fernando Marrero.
Fernando Marrero.
A.K.A. Team PBA. Philly Badass. Fernando. Man, talk about the originality of Fernando. Where's Fernando from? You know what I mean? We want to know, like, what was his upbringing?
Just to keep it 100, keep it a buck. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I can be professional, you know, or I could, you know, stay true to my Philly roots, my upbringing. You know what I mean? But nah, your boy, you know, I'm from Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. You know, Philly, you know, the 215, you know, Philadelphia. You know, Illadelph, you know, so many different nicknames that you can give, you know, the city of brotherly love, another nickname, you know, but it's a great city. It's a blue collar, grassrootsy, salt of the earth type of town, you know, basically, you know, blue collar. And when I mean blue collar, like, I don't think the term blue collar does enough justice to distinguish how blue collar Philadelphia or just that region of the United States is.
Right.
You know, we're just, you got old school, old fashioned, hard working, you know, families, you know, that, you know, that's what it's all about, you know, going back to the inception of this country and what was supposed to be, you know, the foundational, you know, vision for, the quote-unquote American dream.
Right.
All right. Well, I'm from Philly, man. Philly, all the way out here, California. I'm from Philly, man. So originally, I was born in Coatesville, Pennsylvania. Coatesville is a small steel mill industrial town. It's about 45 to 50 miles southwest of Philadelphia. Okay. I was there. I traveled a lot because I was an Army brat. You know, my mom, you know, was in the Army. My dad was in the Army, but, you know, they got married at an early age, divorced at an early age, and, I traveled all over the world, you know, as a young child, you know, because my mom being in the Army, and then, you know, while she was going through her service, ended up pretty much spending, you know, a good majority part of my early childhood in Coatesville, you know, so, yeah, man, that's it, Coatesville, and then up until about sixth grade, seventh grade, and then from seventh grade, went to go live with my mom and my grandparents, who, you know, my mom's parents, they raised me pretty much most of my life, and they ended up taking ill and got sick, and they both died. You know, they died 5 months apart in 1997. And, but, you know, actually, I got my grandparents' names tattooed on my arm. Santiago de Blanch. Madero. So my grandfather, he's Boricua. He's originally from Las Marias, Puerto Rico. Born in 1912. Puerto Rico. That's my grandfather. They, you know, everybody, you know, they call him Jimmy.
Ay. What happened? No sé, se le cayó a él. O se nos cayó a nosotros. ¿Cómo fue esto? Oye, se nos cayó, se nos cayó, se nos fue, se nos cayó esto. La película encendida, mi gente, la película en play. Ya tú sabes, oye, cosas que pasan como queda todos los martes encendido. Ya tú sabes, con la música, estamos con la música encendida. Oh. Uy. Oye, oh, venimos con la entrevista de nuevo a continuación.
Sí.
Así que nosotros estamos, ya tú sabes, un poco encendidos aquí. Y vamos a ver lo que está pasando.
Sí. Vamos, producción, vamos a tratar algo nuevo. Sí. Quita el...
Seguro que sí. Vamos calenturri, papi. Estamos calentando los motores, ya tú sabes, como siempre, los de la Jota Plus. Estamos un poquito aquí bregando con la situación. De esto, se nos fue la luz, se nos fue la luz. Oye, cucú, papá, se fue la luz. Que llegó el cielo.
Estamos aquí, ya producción está trabajando duro aquí, fuerte.
Sí, claro que sí.
Le están metiendo.
Así que, oye, mi gente, ya mismo venimos con Fernando Marrero. Oye, recuerda que nosotros siempre estamos activos. Bien duro, y se cortó la conversación, pero vamos a venirnos de nuevo live, cosas que pasan, cosas y ya tú pasan, sabes.
Cosas que pasan en el barrio fino.
Tranquilo, ya estamos aquí. Live,
estamos live nuevamente. Ay, oye, mi madre.
Se nos corta esto, pero nosotros estamos activos aquí, con cosas que, oye, siempre, oye.
Oye, un martes, todos los martes.
Oye, los martes,
siempre,
oye.
Siempre, todos los martes pasa esto,
Pero tranquilo, nada. Tranquilo.
Estamos bien, estamos activos.
Ya
estamos orgánicos.
Orgánico. Fresh. Ya tú sabes, haciendo un refresh de nuevo. Vamos para encima.
Oh, ahí está. Producción.
Zúmbalo ahí. Papi. Estamos activos. Oye, cortó un poco la señal.
Yo, round two. Man, sorry about that. Every Tuesday, something funny. It's always something. Either the sound, the signal, life.
It's all good, but they can't stop greatness. They can't stop what you guys are doing. You know, we can't stop what I'm doing, and we coming together. It's like Captain Planet out this bitch. I'm sorry, can I cut?
This is your show.
Hey, man, it's like Captain Planet out this bitch. You know what I'm saying? When your powers combine, when our powers combine, you know what I'm saying? Like,
bring out all the truffle butter.
We started again.
Yeah, man. So we were at. Your grandparents are from Las Marias, Puerto Rico. Am I right? That's where we left.
Yeah, well, my grandfather, my mom's dad, his name is Santiago Marrero.
Santiago.
He's from Las Marias, Puerto Rico. I still have family down there, all the Marreros. Las Marias, Guanica, Ponce, Carolina, San Juan. You know, a lot of family still down there on the Marrero side. You know, my grandfather, you know, he was in the Army down there in Puerto Rico. He came to this country, United States, in 1944, you know, during World War II, tail end of World War II. And, you know, it's pretty much been, you know, working hard, you know, all of his life, you know, just 30 plus some odd years in a steel mill, you know, breaking his back, you know, for his family, and got hard on the job. And, you know, they don't make them like that. You know, no more. They don't make them like they used to. You know, just old school, hardworking. You know, salt of the earth. You know, blue collar, grassroots. Do what you got to do for, you know, for your family. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. And it's funny.
But my grandmother, she's Afro American. She's from the United States. Okay. She was born actually in 1930, back in Reading, Pennsylvania. So she's from Pennsylvania, but all of our family on my grandmother's side. Dates back to slavery, right. And then beyond that. And then actually, I recently did my African ancestry DNA through African ancestry through that company, and found out, you know, there were results that were revealed that on my maternal side through the Master Clan testing that we were descended from the Tikar people, which is basically modern day Cameroon along the border of Cameroon and Nigeria.
Oof. My brother.
Hey, thank you for your service,
right,
bro.
To the culture, for the land, all that. You know, always got to represent, you know what I mean?
Always. Wakanda forever.
I forget to tell you.
Man, you know what I'm saying? Like, no, like, I'm a living testimony, living proof. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, there should be and can't be no racism because, yo, excuse my language, yo. Yo, all that racism shit, that shit's for suckers, is bullshit. You know what I'm saying? It should never happen. There's no place in this world, in this society, or whatever have you. And again, looking at me like I'm a byproduct of one big motherfucking orgy. You know what I'm saying?
Right,
so
that's right. And it's crazy that you said that, you know, like how you've been, you know, your family, they're toured from everywhere because they have military, you know, background. How you, ironically, right, young age, how did you get up, you know, how did you end up being in the military yourself? And as he was saying, thank you for serving us. You know.
Yeah. Oh no, I mean, can you hear me?
Yeah, there we go.
Right. I appreciate the analogy. You know, I'm a firm advocate, staunch advocate for veterans, military veterans, for, you know, the men and women, you know, who were civilians who, you know, put on the uniforms, signed their life over on the dotted line, you know, to serve, you know, this country and to, you know, to protect our freedoms. I mean, without the military, without, you know, the men and women serving in the United States Armed Forces in whatever capacity during peacetime, wartime, or whatever have you, like the things that we do, that we're doing right now, whatever have you, none of that would be possible. You know, so how did I get into the military? Well, again, going back to my upbringing, you know, my roots, again, I'm from Philly, man. You know, Philadelphia is a rough city. I come from poverty. You know, I was poor. Family was poor. Disenfranchisement, you know, is, you know, all the, you know, different things that kind of, you know, plight a lot of, you know, marginalized, you know, families and demographics here in this country. And, you know, I just made a decision. So, you know, I got to get out of the city. I got to, you know, do something with my life, with myself, or whatever have you. Unfortunately, you know, I'm a product of, like, group homes and institutions and, you know, was in group homes and foster homes at a real, you know, during my adolescence. And, you know, from there, I just had to make a decision. You know what I mean? I was looking for love in all the wrong places. Ended up having, you know, kids early, you know, as a teenager. I have my first son, my oldest son, who will be 22 in a few days, Fernando Jr. Happy forthcoming birthday to you if you're listening. But yeah, he was born in, you know, 1999. And I was 17 years old, 16 when he was conceived, you know what I mean? So, you know, and I ended up, you know, I wanted to do the old fashioned, you know,
get married, work, have a job, then have the baby.
Right. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, you get a girl pregnant, especially back then, at a young age, different time, different place, culture, whatever, you take care of your family. You know, if you ain't got no other options, college or whatever have you, even I was a great student, but because of life and life circumstances, you know, I couldn't really make any serious moves. So I had to, you know what, military was an option. I had to get out the hood, get out the ghetto, and do what I needed to do to, you know, take care of my business and take care of my family. So I was, what, married at 17, separated at 18, divorced by 19, and then ended up in the military. I was in the United States Air Force, security forces, military police, and then from there, ended up getting out, went through, you know, a gnarly divorce, where all that got squashed, whatever have you. Came out to Cali, you know, just was doing my thing, you know, just in search of a better life for myself and, you know, for my kids. And then come 2003, 2004, found out my kids were, you know, in foster homes and whatever have you, and taken away from my ex-wife, you know, their mother, biological mother. And I was fighting, going back and forth from Los Angeles to Philly for about like a year, hearing some change. And then finally I was awarded you know, custody, full custody. And at this time, too, I re-enlisted back into the military. I joined the United States Army, California Army National Guard component. And I was 13 Bravo Field Artillery. And, yeah, I got full custody. And then they're raising my two sons, Fernando and Jonathan. You know, they're both, you know, old now, grown. You know, Fernando will be 22 in a few days. Jonathan just turned 20 back in February. So he's, you know, college wrestler, student athlete. He's also an up and coming actor, you know, phenomenal kid, you know. And that's it, man. Just did the single dad thing from 2005 up until recently. And, you know, they're doing their thing. And I'm proud of the men that they became. And, you know, it was an interesting journey. You know, there were some hurdles along the way, but, you know, nonetheless, it is what it is.
You know
what
yeah, I mean? Because you had to become a man. You had to, basically, you became a man at 16.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, at a young age. And then prior to that, you know, going through the whole group homes and all that stuff, I had to basically been home since I was 15. I had to figure it out. You know what I mean?
Right, right. And some of your, how would you classify your experiences being in the Army? Like, were they all good, all bad, good and bad? Like, stuff that you could talk about?
There was a mix.
Okay.
Yeah, no, there was a mix. I mean, there were some good experiences, some bad experiences. You know, you know, a lot of the bad experiences, I guess I won't, you know, that out of me for another show because there's too many to list.
Yeah.
You know, all in all, for the, you know, from the military, from my perspective, it just, I didn't like the horse shit and the bullshit when it came to the politics.
Right.
You know, and, you know, and, you know, so many vets go through this, whatever. And that's one of the reasons, because my own personal experiences and from what I've seen, you know, happen to vets in my family and just throughout the years, and you see it all the time, you know. When you go in, you sign on the battle line, you're all gung-ho, you're ready to serve, protect this country, go to war, especially when you're young, you know, 16, 17, 18-year-old kid,
yeah.
You know, you kind of get indoctrinated a little bit, i.e. brainwashed or whatever, and you just watch too many Rambo movies and you're ready to, you know, get into shit and fuck some shit up, blow shit up, whatever happens, you know, but,
Rambo movies.
You know, all in all, yeah. It's like, you know, as soon as you're no longer conducive to the mission readiness, the United States Armed Forces and the U.S. government, you're expendable. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Things start to happen and shit starts to come up missing or whatever have you. And, you know, and sometimes, you know, they'll try to discredit you or whatever. And then, you know, there's no transitional assistance or anything for a lot of the vets once they ETS, once they separate. But, and then for me, you know, I had, you know, undergone and incurred so many different injuries and, you know, maladies,
yeah.
You know, afflictions, physical, mental, psychological, whatever had, you know what I mean, to where it took me literally, you know, 21 years. I was fighting the VA 21 years just to get some sort of, like, benefits or assistance or, you know, my service connection and all that stuff or whatever. And then eventually, you know, it did happen, you know what I mean? It's crazy because, yeah. Like, a lot of the older vets, they would say, well, it's an acronym, they would say, hey, young blood, it's the 3 weeks. You know, they want you to die. They want to delay you. You know, deny you, delay you, or they just want you to fucking die so you ain't got to pay.
Right,
you know what I mean?
Right,
so
right,
it's
right.
Like,
look at that.
Who many,
you know,
the, who many years you sign off on military service?
So I did a little shy of 5 years. I went in 2000, in the year 2000, right after high school graduation. I actually went in technically when I signed the contract as part of the DEP program, DEP. Delayed entry program. That was in April of 2000. That was like a few months prior to my arrival date for boot camp. And then not really thinking and still being a young kid or whatnot, I chose the wrong date to go to boot camp. So I ended up going to boot camp on July 25th of 2000. And again, my boot camp was at Lackland Air Force Base in San Antonio, Texas. So again, July, middle of summer,
San Antonio, Texas, hottest days.
We're looking at temperatures
115,
120.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't fun, but you know, it was a great experience. And I mean, and then also getting back on the experiences, the camaraderie, man. You know what I'm saying? Like the brotherhood. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, the love that you got for your brothers and sisters that are like in the grind, in the shit, sleeping in on the dirt or sleeping in a sleeping bag next to you or whatever. And I'm still like tight and got mad love for a lot of cats that, you know what I'm saying, I was in boot camp with 21 years ago, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Sometimes we can go 2, 3, 4 years without talking, but as soon as we talk or see each other, it's like we picked up like where we left off, like nothing happened, you know what I mean? And that's how, you know, truly authentic and genuine, how profound, you know, that camaraderie, you know, really is that you share, you know, with people that you forge, you know, bonds and relationships with, you know, when you go through those experiences.
Right. And then, so you were shaping your life to be what I like to call Philly badass already. So yeah. Now.
Oh, pause. So I'm sorry. I got a little psychic. So to answer John's question, you know, so I went in 2000, got out the Air Force in 2001. Came out to Cali, joined the Army, did the Army for 3 years. So it's from 03 to 06. So it was about 4 years and some change, a little shy of 5 years total combined.
And then after that, so now you're at this point, you're a Philly badass because you just came out the Army. And then now.
Well, I've always been a Philly badass.
You've always been a Philly
always
badass.
Had this chip on my shoulder.
So now we transition, right? You got out the Army and then now you just entered MMA. Am I correct?
Yeah, man.
Look at that. So you've been fighting for all your life till you got a chance to get in a ring and fight for real.
Literally and figuratively.
Right. So let me see. You started what, 2006?
Yeah, started in 2006. A little bit after I got out the Army. And, you know, also, too, about like a year or so after my surgery, because that's one of the reasons that led to my subsequent military discharge was a medical discharge. I was supposed to go to Iraq for the war in 2005. I got orders. I still have those orders to this day, and a lot of other. I keep everything. I'm like the Keeper Ball record, whatever. But and then you know, I blew my shoulder out in training. I was at Camp Williams, Camp W.D. Williams in Riverton, Utah, a little bit outside of Salt Lake City. Going for MOS requalification training for my 13 Bravo, which is cannon crew member for the field artillery, basically, you know, for tanks. You know what I mean? It's a big-ass tank, but with the howitzers, the M109 howitzers, it's like a tank, but it's technically not a tank. It's called the gun because, you know, various different features that, you know, differentiate, you know, that type of tank,
a gun, but it's a tank,
as opposed to an actual tank or whatever.
But
you know, we dealt with the Paladins and the M109 howitzers, and I got hurt in training. That was in January 05, and then literally days to like a week or so later, that's when I got the news and I got awarded full custody of both my sons. So now I'm injured. I had to get out.
You gotta make some money.
I gotta take care of, you know?
Yeah. And you're a grown ass man at this point. You're a full on grown ass man.
Yeah, I got in the fight, man. I'm like, you know, I got to do something. I got 2 kids to, you know, take care of. And I started doing the Hollywood bouncer, nightclub scene. You know, a lot of the bouncers at that time were, you know, kickboxers. A lot of them were international, you know, from different countries, cage fighters. And then at that time in California, MMA was still very much so a novelty, if you will. Even though it started getting traction, it was still...
It wasn't big enough, not like boxing or whatever other...
Exactly. It wasn't really popular. You know, it was still somewhat underground.
Yeah.
We were doing a lot of what was called smokers, which were underground illegal fights.
Right.
You know, sometimes we fought for free, sometimes we fought for $50. Sometimes it's just whatever, you know what I mean? But just to get that experience and whatnot before we try to, journey, you know, and traverse our way, you know, to the next level. And everybody ultimately wanted to get to like the big shovel, like the UFC or over in Japan, Pride or Shudo or whatever, you know, contingent over in Asia, you know.
You got into the amateur league, right?
No, so I started doing all the smokers first or whatever.
Okay.
And then officially I didn't have an amateur career, but that experience on the smokers, on that scene. That was my my amateur experience. So I have a total win loss fight record of 7 wins and 1 loss as an amateur.
In the smokers. So we're talking about like you went on some Kimbo Slice shit, basically.
that backyard
ring, and whoever wants it, they're gonna get it. Philly badass.
Yeah, exactly.
You gave it to a Philly cheesesteak. A fucking Philly cheesesteak for their face right there. Boom. Served.
Exactly.
Hot on a plate. Wow. That takes balls, my dude. Like, yeah, I commend you on that. Yeah, that's breaking necks and jaws and all types of shit.
Hey, man, I'm in the business of snapping necks and cashing checks. You know what I mean?
Snapping necks and cashing checks. So then later after the smokers, you got to do pro. Yeah, I imagine right after, or how long after?
No, not right after. I was slated to go pro in 2009 or whatever have you. So in 2008, January, my last smoker, I lost by a decision. Actually, I blew my knee out. My left knee, actually, 60 and like little scar still to this day. Got a few screws or whatever. Blew my ACL and my PCL. In the very first round of the fight, and never forget this event. It's called the Ring of Fire, based out of Monrovia, California. It was a smoker, underground smoker. Pablo Cordova, the Aztec assassin or Aztec warrior, whatever you call his name. Great guy, nothing against him, whatever. But, you know.
Well, that happened when did you fight in the MMA?
Yeah, in MMA, yep. 2008, first round of the fight, there was some water or sweat like in the corner of the ring that I guess they didn't wipe up from a previous fight. You know, I ended up stepping and my knee
like
buckled.
Like kicking
then,
somebody on it.
Exactly. Oh, no, not from the kick. So I'm like locked up. And then, like, just to get the foot placement, just from stepping, my knee buckled. So, my knee went one way. And my body went the other way. So, and then inside your knee, it's the ACL, so it's like a rubber band that keeps, you know, your knee stabilizing together. And it popped. And in, you know, a venue like that with hundreds of people and music bland, whatever, I heard the pop, I felt the pop. It was the most excruciating pain that I've ever felt. I've been hit by cars.
And you dropped because of the pop.
Yeah, exactly. And that was in the first time, but still, I was like, you know what, fuck it. But, you know, chin down, hands up, bite down your mouthpiece. You know, we gonna go balls out. And, you know, basically, that's when, you know, the Philly badass really, you know, kicked in or whatever. Like, you gonna have to kill me. Like, I'm either gonna die, or I'm either gonna go through this, or I'm gonna come back on my shield, you know, type stuff or whatever.
Right.
Yeah, that was it, man. And then I ended up finishing the fight on top in the full mount position, just like beating the dude's face in, and then it went to a judge's decision. I lost the judge's decision, and that was my last smoker amateur. And then I had surgery, subsequent surgery on my knee for the ACL for the repair. And then from there, and then shout out to Coach Clarence Cheney, strength conditioning coach, former semi-professional football player. He actually was instrumental in the rehabilitation of my knee. Like, usually, like, knee injuries like that, NFL or any other type of sport, those are game changers. Those are, like, career-ending injuries. And if it wasn't for Coach Clarence Cheney, man, like, I don't know, like, I was supposed to be done. But I was out of the sport, you know, sideline for about 2 years. It took me about 2 years for recovery. Yeah. And then I just got back into it, and I just kept.
We somehow shared this knee injury because recently
today having something
today,
something
somebody something happened down the stairs. he went down the stairs and busted his knee.
Yeah,
I mean, he's okay.
I'm okay.
And then wifey.
Oh damn!
4th of July. My gosh, we gotta tell this story just a little bit. We gotta cut a little bit just to say this.
You say I'm hurt.
All right, so husband decides to take a one of those whatever you call them, explosion things, a TNT. He decides to light it up, throw it up in the air, and we all start running. You know what I mean? Because we don't know what's gonna happen. So as soon as he bent down to throw it up, we already blew past everybody. His dear wife, she clicked on some turbos on those Crocs shoes that she had on, But she didn't calculate the estimation of going up the little ramp towards her driveway. So one pinky toe stood, and then the rest followed. And then next thing you know, you had this effect. Boom, knee, pow.
Like, head. Like chin, head.
Yeah. Fingers. She did the worm without music, basically. Yo, like, and then me, like, trying to do a backflip in 2008. Yeah, the second time I dislocated my knee. The first time was dancing. Second time, I doing a backflip, tore meniscus. And I was out for a few months. So
now I could see it. I could see somebody doing that on an attempted backflip, but Jossie.
Yeah.
Wow. You're like the expert dancer. You know what I'm saying? You were like, you know, Suavecito. You know what I'm saying? Like, Rizzo Suave out there.
The third time I had to.
I'm too broken.
Yeah, man, bro. But still, I was getting that trouble with it. Anyways.
Hey, Fernando, when did you get the injury? Everything happened in Brazil or it happened here?
No, it happened here in California.
When did you get when did you go to Brazil?
The knee injury happened in January of 2008. I had a subsequent knee surgery, reconstruction surgery in February 2008. And then I was sidelined for about 2 years. And then it took me a while to come back, but I came back. And then just throughout the years, man, you know, I had my pro debut for Respecting the Cage in 2011, July 2011. I was supposed to fight one individual, you know, his name was Chris Herrera, but at the time he was in the military, he was in the Marines, and he got orders to deploy to Afghanistan. So he ended up going to Afghanistan. Then they had got me a last minute replacement on like, a day notice, 2 days notice or whatever. And, you know, and the guy was like a black belt, BJJ. At the time I was a blue belt, but I was a better striker or whatever, and still learning the ground game. And it was a competitive fight. Yeah. But, you know, he did his thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah. So when did you go?
So I was losing my pro debut, and then I lost another one a few years later. So as I started my professional career upside down, I was 0 wins, 2 losses.
Wow.
Mentally, that's a mindset.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, a lot of people, they don't come back from that, and they quit, give up, whatever. It's like, damn, what's going on? Like, what's not clicking? And then, you know, I just said so many different issues, distractions, injuries, and had an eye injury. Then I had concussions and a whole bunch of other, you know, slew of bullshit that was happening. And then, you know, finally, man, you know, all the stars weren't aligned. In 2016, I made my return back from, you know, my last fight in 2014. And then I just went on a tear, and I went on a 10-fight win streak. Ended up winning 2 titles for the Gladiator Challenge promotion, which is a California-based regional promotion. Shout out to Ted Williams, senior, and Ted Williams, junior. You know, they gave me a platform. They saw something in me. They believed in me, and they gave me a platform to showcase my talent. And I just went on the rampage.
Damn, that's crazy. He saw 0-2, 0-for-2. Fuck this. No, we're going to change the narrative. And you went 10-2.
10-2.
Yeah.
10-2. And then, so he was asking, so you know, you practice MMA, you know.
John C. Decime, eu falo um pouco português. Você fala português?
Um pouquinho.
Um pouco?
Eu falo espanhol e português. Um pouquinho. Yo hablo español, pero solamente un poco. Yo hablo la idioma de español muy mal.
Ojalá decir, ¿cómo va? You're in the trouble? No.
Obrigado.
No, obrigado.
Okay. All right. Damn.
What part of Brazil do you go in? For fight.
Again?
Oh, what part are you going to Brazil?
Oh, when I went to Brazil, yes, I went to Brazil in 2014. I went to Rio de Janeiro.
Oh, Rio de Janeiro.
Okay. Brazil, beautiful country. Rio de Janeiro, Beautiful, beautiful city. a lot of great things about Brazil. You know what I mean? Yeah, like, yeah.
You can say that. You can say the beautiful ladies and.
That's crazy. So, damn, 10-2, my man. It's like, what do I need to do to, like, fight against you? Like, how much do I need to prepare? That is rhetorical, by the way. You don't need to answer that.
Yeah.
But gosh damn, you know.
For the ordinary person, or just for anybody, I don't give a damn who you are, where you're from. You could be Mike Tyson, Logan Paul, Floyd Mayweather, Tito Ortiz. Like, when you fight me, and, you know, especially I'm fine, you know what I mean? And I'm not too far removed from being, you know, retired. I'm like semi-retired. So I retired back in 2017, December 2017, which was my last fight. And, you know, again, to fight me, man, it's different. It is different. You know what I mean? Like, I'm bringing, you know, me, my spirit, my heart, my soul, you know, all my pain, all my disappointments, you know, negative experiences, everything that came with me, you know, from that basically forged me into the man that I am, you know what I mean? But I'm unleashing that with bad intentions. And then whatever happens, I'm either going to knock you the fuck out, you're going to knock me the fuck out, or whatever, you know what I mean? Then we'll go grab a beer after it, you know what I'm saying? And we're going to slap each other on the hands, jack it up, it's all good. But if not, and if I don't like you, then I still don't fuck with you, like, whatever, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, you got to be willing to die in there, you know what I'm saying? And, you know, and especially at that point where I was fighting, man. Like, I'll say this, and I say it all the time. MMA, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, martial arts saved my life. You know what I mean? Like, well, everything that I've been through, that I had to champion, that I had to overcome, like, I've already fallen into so many different statistical categories. It should have continued. You know what I mean? Should have
been
a perpetual recidivism of just, you know, falling into these statistical categories. You know what I mean? Like, you know, I should be dead. I should be incarcerated. I should be drug addicted. You know what I mean? Homeless or whatever. But, you know, all those things. And it's crazy. I've had encounters with some of those, you know, various different things that I just listed or whatever throughout life or whatever. You know, I've been homeless before. You know, I've, you know, been incarcerated before. You know what I mean? You know, we've made, maybe not all of us, but some of us have parties. You know what I mean? And sometimes those situations, you know, have to happen in order for you to grow as a man and as a human being. So, you know what? No, that's not for me anymore. You know what I mean?
Right.
And then your energy shifts, your priorities change, and then you just have to keep going and, you know, keep everything focused as far as your priorities is concerned.
Hey, Fernando, I have one question. Like, how you feeling when you fighting the first loss? How you feeling? Like I lost that two fighting, you know? You lost two fight, you know. How you feeling?
Yeah.
Like that's not for me. What are you thinking?
Yeah, no. I love fighting. I miss fighting. You know what I mean? But at the end of the day, as one thing that we all have to realize, you know, just as human beings, Father Time is undefeated. You know what I'm saying? No matter how much my head and my mind says, you know, I can go. And even my body sometimes, you know, we'll mislead. So, you know, I can go. But it's like, oh, damn, like, shit. The AGE factor, getting old, aging, like, that shit's real. I mean, especially when you've put so many miles on your body and have had so many injuries, like myself or whatever. You know what I mean? It's like, I want to go. And hey, again, my options are still open. Hey, if a fight comes across my radar and for the right price, the right purse, the right opponent, the right exposure, hey, I'm down. I'll get back in the cage, get in the ring. Hey, fuck it. I'll even do some boxing shit, you know, with Logan Paul, Jake Paul, whoever else. Whatever I got to do to get a new fucking payday, you know what I'm saying? I got kids to put through college, and I got a mortgage. So, holler at your boy. If y'all want to scrap, we can get down. You know what I'm saying?
You lost for no TKO, or you lost for decision?
No, man. Whatever I can get. You know what I mean? Out of all my fights, all my professional fights, again, I had 12 professional fights, 10 wins, 2 losses. Out of those 12 professional fights, only one fight went to a decision. And that dude was a tough son of a bitch. You know what I mean? And his name was Robert Allensworth. You know, just tough dude. You know what I mean? Just one of those gritty dudes. He he's hungry. I mean, and don't let his record, you know what I'm saying? I think his records are not too good or whatever, but he's just a scrapper, you know what I'm saying? Right. But, you know, if I get the knockout, I'll knock you out. You can look me up on shirtoff.com, which is an official stats keeper or whatever for all, like, MMA fights and combat sports or whatever. You know, all my fights didn't last past the first round for the most part, you know what I mean? So only one fight went to decision. You know, everything else was either a knockout or by submission. So, like, it for me, it's equally as gratifying to knock somebody out or to get a hold of, like, a leg or a neck, you know, mata liao, and just, you know what I mean, put somebody to sleep.
Yeah. So, in your losses, I think he wanted to know, was it by decision or you get knocked out in your two losses?
No, so my two losses, my pro debut, let's see here. So let's go back to the smokers. I lost the decision. My last fight, that was in 2008. And then as a professional, in my pro record, my first two fights, my first loss, I ended up losing in the second round by referee stoppage. The guy had taken me down. Tried to stand where he didn't want to stand. Got a great takedown after, you know, I threw like a nasty, like, knee leg kick or something like that. He ate it. Grabbed the leg, took him down, and he ended up getting a position called cross side or side control, and then he ended up trapping both of my arms in what's called a top crucifix position. So one arm is trapped with his leg, the other arm is trapped with one of his arms, and he's got one on three, boom, and his top just punched me in the face, but they're like little pity-pat punches, not a lot of power. I'm not taking any damage, but I'm stuck because the guy is a good wrestler, he's strong. I couldn't really escape the maneuver, but I'm just taking punches. But the referee, he ended up stopping the fight because I couldn't, to the referee's estimation, intelligently defend myself.
Yeah.
So that was the referee stoppage in that one fight. And then the second fight that I lost actually, he's a UFC veteran, Jordan Johnson. That was in April 2014. And that was for Duel for Domination in Arizona we fought. And I came out the gates and I pieced him up and everything was looking good. And then I got caught with, I think it was either an uppercut or a knee that dropped me. And then he ended up getting back mount and then he hit me with a lot of shots to the back of the head, which are illegal, by the way. And he was still going. So I was out cold. He just hit the shots to the back of the head. And I was just slowly out cold. And, you know, it's illegal. He should have been disqualified. I contested it, you know, with the Arizona Boxing Commission. You know, it's on video or whatever, but they didn't reverse the decision or whatever. And it is what it is, whatever. Like, hey, two kids in the pocket, fuck it. You know what I'm saying?
That's crazy.
But nonetheless, let the record show, the video, they don't lie. You know what I mean?
Illegal shots, got you.
But it is what it is. And then I just came back and just did my thing, you know what I mean? And, you know, hey, onward and upward. You know what I'm saying?
That's right. That's right.
You know.
Damn. And then, so after MMA, you tried something new, something different. Well, it's not so different. You got into wrestling.
Oh.
That's wrestling. That's the wrestling.
That's the wrestling. What's the MMA one? What's the MMA one?
No. That's that. Do you know who the guy is?
Yeah, it sounds like DC.
There you go.
Hey, man, we were all young once, and we were all in some way influenced and inspired by Bruce Lee, the Saturday morning, Saturday afternoon kung fu flicks, you know what I mean?
Yes.
John, he knows me. I've
turned
to avenge my father.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, I'm John C. Undefeated, 5 invited knockout. And then I do the presentation. I can fight.
Man, so then you got into wrestling. How did that transition? Like, you went from throwing kicks, punch somebody's face, to grabbing somebody's head and putting it in a headlock. And submission and all that stuff,
As a youngster, man, my grandfather, he was a huge, huge wrestling fan, and he used to watch. He used to tell me about, and he also used to watch some of the the wrestling that was happening in Puerto Rico with WWC, World Wrestling Council,
Carlos Colón.
Yes, and not Carlito. Before, it was Carlos.
Carlos Colón.
Yeah, and then Carlito, you know what I mean? And then all the great guys of the
Tiene la cara como una chuleta.
Sí. He said his face looked like a pork chop.
Yeah, it does. Oh, man. It's like Abdullah the Butcher or Dusty Rhodes. Yeah, from all the,
always, you know, bro. Like with the fork, like in the head. Like carnitas.
That's crazy,
like that,
man. But we used to watch that, man. It was great. And to see, you know, people that look like us, you know, do, like, oh, man, this is possible. You know what I mean? So it's great. I was always a fan. I wanted to, get involved into it a long time ago, actually, when I first moved out to Los Angeles. So around 2003, I met Rob Van Dam.
It's a brother, Van Dam brother, yeah.
Yeah, and I was actually, he came into my building in Westwood. I was a head of security for a building called the Arden Building, off of Wilshire Boulevard and Arden Avenue or whatever, but it's like Jeff Lopez had, JLE Enterprises there, Benny Medina and Jeffrey Pollock had Hanford Entertainment, which was like a production management, agency company or whatever. A lot of different law firms were there. And Rob Van Dam was, I believe, at the time being represented by Handprint Entertainment. And he came in, and I was just at the front desk, and he just was a normal, down-to-earth guy, and was shooting the shit, and, great guy, gave me a lot of great info. And it's like, hey, how do you become a wrestler? How do you get involved in that? Hey, you got to go to school, like with anything else. All right, cool. So he gave me a few referrals, whatever. I ended up checking out one spot, which was actually notorious and, famous, synonymous for, sending out, putting out a lot of, producing a lot of good talent. Like John Cena went there. It was called UPW, Ultimate Pro Wrestling, ran by Rick Bassman. It was also in association with the R1 Training Center, which was the MMA side, Randy Couture, Dan Henderson, Rico Ceparelli, Vladimir Matyshenko, on the MMA side, they were doing their thing. And then, Rick Bassman and a lot of the guys, Rey Mysterio, John Cena, a lot of guys, came through UPW over there in El Segundo, California. And then right at the time, I was making $8, $9, $10 an hour. I couldn't afford tuition. Their tuition was a little bit pricey, quite a few thousand dollars. And then whatever, I got into MMA. But I'm like, it was just this journey burning like fire inside me. So, I got to try this wrestling shit. You know what I mean? And then I ended up finding out that Rikishi, Salofa Fatu, better known as Rikishi, in the WWE, universe. Big Samoan guy, Samoan Dynasty, all the Samoans. Found out he had a school in Sun Valley, which is near like Pacoima, North Hollywood, in the valley. And checked it out. They embraced me and, got trained up. And so it was Rikishi, Reno, Anawai, known as the Cali, California, the Black Pearl, Shin Bodhi, and then also David Heath, better known as Gangrel, as an Empire Warrior with the WWE or during the WWF Attitude Era. And, I trained up and started doing shows and started traveling. And, I still do shows here and there, whatever have you, but just had a great time, great experience, and learned a lot. And, those OGs of the business took me under their wing, showed me a lot. And it was actually because of Knopf Pro Wrestling Academy and, Rikishi and all those guys that kind of helped me, boom, bust my foot and bust the door open to Hollywood, because that led to 2016 and the filming of Adam Sandler's Sandy Wexler, which I had the privilege and the honor to get an opportunity to have a role, a stunt acting role in that, which allowed me to become SAG partly, SAG eligible, and then I ended up joining the SAG actor union and got, management, an agent, all out full representation.
Just
been rocking the role ever since.
Damn, that is crazy.
Hey, do you have a special for every fighter in the wrestling, he do like a special. You finish it, the road, yeah. Bang,
Yeah.
When you finish it?
Oh, I have a couple finishes. Well, I kept it true to my
The most that you like. Which one is
it? Oh, no, no. I got two finishes. So I kept it true to my roots with, you know, the submissions and the jiu-jitsu and the martial arts. So I have a finish called the Mata Leão, which is Portuguese for lion killer. It basically, it's also what they call the rear naked choke. You know, Mata Leão.
I can do it right now with Jonesy?
Yeah, you can do it on Jonesy, yeah.
Let me see.
Come here.
Yeah. Like, don't Milona like that?
No. So bring the arm. No. Arm around his neck.
Oh, this one?
Yeah. Now grab your muscle. Grab your bicep. No. Grab your bicep. All right. Now bring that in the back of his head.
Oh, okay.
And grab your shoulder. Your shoulder.
Oh, I got it. I got it, my shoulder.
Yeah. And then you just whip.
What am I doing?
That arm that's around his neck, pull back on your shoulder. And you squeeze. 2 seconds, he goes to sleep.
Oh, okay.
And then my other finisher is called the reality check.
Reality check.
How you do that one?
So basically, I'll hit a boot to the stomach.
Yeah.
Right?
The stomach. Okay.
I go for a suplex. Pick him up. Like, I'm going to suplex him.
Yeah.
But I turn my body. And I hit him with a diamond cutter.
Oh, okay. Don't see it.
Yeah, we're going to save that one for later. Wow. Yo, that is crazy.
And what way do you fight in? In the middleweight, heavyweight?
No, so when I was doing MMA, I fought a couple times at heavyweight. I'm like the martial arts world, professional competition and competing. Regarded as a smaller size heavyweight because at the time I was walking around like about 230, 240 pounds between that. But you get a lot of these guys who are 230, 240 were cutting, especially the water weight cut, they were cutting to like 185 pounds, 170 pounds, you know, to try to get some sort of advantage or whatever. So I ended up cutting a couple times to 185 where I fought at 185. I also cut to 205. 205 was more of a natural and easy cut for me. But after a while, I stopped cutting because I couldn't, and you know my body just wouldn't, you know, lose the weight. And I remember for one of my fights where my body had stalled so bad, you know, you start to feel the effects. You know, you start shaking, and you know, like you had to get rehydrated. And you get some people from cutting weight like that, you know, they end up in the hospital. You know, kidney failure, and you know, your organs start to shut down. So I'm like, no, that was that. It's like we're gonna be in shape wherever I'm walking around at. That's where we find that. Well, I might cut 10 to 15 pounds, but anything more than that, because in one of the fights, I had like a maybe, I think like a 12-week camp leading up into the fight, up until the day before weigh-ins. I was supposed to weigh in at 185. I ended up weighing in at like 205, 210, something like that. My body could not cut any more weight, so I had to basically dehydrate myself, put the plastics on, the sweet sweat, the Abilene, jump rope, shadow boxing on the bike, spitting, sauna, all that, you know, whatever. And then, that was it. And then, so come time of the weigh-in, I couldn't eat, drink, nothing or whatever. And then come time of the weigh-in the next day, I weighed in at 184 pounds. And then I had to go back to the hotel, had a nurse come, they hooked me up to IV, I started to get the fluids back in me, and then coming out of the fight, I'm like, 210, 215 pounds. So I put that weight back on or whatever, but I still wasn't at, you know, peak performance because I had done so much, you know, trauma to my body and trying to, you know, make that weight cut, especially, you know, doing the dehydration.
And what music do you like for your intro and wrestling? You know, everybody.
Oh, man. The thing is, I like everything, man. You know, I'm eclectic, you know, for a long time. I couldn't listen to country music, but for whatever reason, like I'm kind of feeling country
what
now.
What are you doing? Like, you intro life.
When I intro, some of my things, like I used to come out to the drowning pool, let the body hit the floor, you know, something hard, aggressive.
Hit the body to the floor.
And you put in you put in like baby O for a light, you know, like more like people's painting.
Sometimes, especially when I used to be, you know, bigger and buffer, but now I kind of got like the 40-year-old dad bod thing going on. So, I know, me no care. You know what I mean? Yeah. I don't care. So, you know, if I do, you know, I'll put put oil, or if not, I'll spray water because sometimes it gets hot in the back in the locker room and all that stuff. So I'll spray, put my hair down, all that. And then I'll probably come out to like some rap or some rock song. You know, I love DMX. I love, you know, actually the one song, it's a rock and roll song by a group called Seven Dust. And the name of the song is called Praise. And actually the lead singer, lead vocalist for that rock group is a black man. Now, a lot of people don't realize that like a lot of these rock bands or whatnot, their frontman, their lead vocalist, they can really riff as well. They brothers, you know what I'm saying? It's like brothers can do it too, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing, but now I come out to that. So just whatever puts me in the mood to just be angry and aggressive and to put on the show and put smiles on faces and butts in seats, man, that's what it's all about at the end of the day.
That's right.
Oh, okay.
That's right. And then, so now you just busted your way through acting with all these life experience from kicking ass, whooping ass, and beating up ass, and all the asses all together.
Smack it up, rub it down.
You know what I mean? So now you just kicked your way in the front door to acting. And what was your first role you just said?
Man, my breakthrough role was Sandy Westwood with Adam Sandler and Terry Crews.
Ooh.
That was like my breakthrough, whatever. It's like I had done some background stuff or whatever in the past years. But I never really took the shit seriously or whatever, never really thought about it. It wasn't really my thing, but, you know, I'm like, damn. You know, especially with the stunts, you know, it's like, okay, this is what we do. You know, we're glorified stuntmen in wrestling and we're putting our bodies on the line all the time with MMA. It's like, you know, I'll just go ahead and put it out there. When I was just did 2 days of filming with Sandy Wessler, Happy Madison, all that, we were at the farm, filming for like 2 days, literally 15 minutes in front of the camera, I got paid $10,000.
I'm like, damn.
For 15 minutes? Are you serious? Look, you know what? You know, again, you start, you know, I'm a 1+1=2 kind of guy. This makes sense compared to what I was making, you know, MMA or even wrestling or whatever. It's like, you know what? Let's go ahead and let's diversify. Let's shift, course a little bit, and you know, there's definitely some potential and some longevity in this as opposed, you know, to wrestling or even MMA. Because, like I said earlier, you know, Father Time's undefeated, and at some point, you know, we got to hang it up. We got to slow down. You know what I mean, I don't want to be nothing against. I love Ric Flair. Ric Flair is a nature boy.
Woo! Yeah, Ric Flair.
He's an amazing talent. One of my biggest influences growing up in professional wrestling. But man, you really gotta love the business, and I love the business. But I don't love the business that much to where I'm going to sacrifice my body night in, night out, 300 days on the road out the year. You know, for the better part of 30 to 40 years. You know what I'm saying? Usually, average career, if you're lucky, maybe get 5 years, 10 years.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But to be at that level and the level that he was on, nothing but love and respect to that guy and a lot of the guys from that generation, because that was the golden era of wrestling.
Right.
You know what
I
mean? Right. But nah, man, I want to be able to get out of bed in the morning. I want to be able to, you know, run after my grandkids.
That's right.
You know what I mean? When I'm older.
That's
so
right.
At some point, you got to plan. I mean, you got to plan for life and, you know, plan for family and all that or whatever, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And then after that, you did another role, I believe, for TV, if I'm not mistaken?
I ended up doing Sandy Westler. And then after that, I did a series of other things. Everything's All on IMDb, check me out. I also did Grownish on Freeform, ABC Family, which was the spinoff to Blackish with Yara Shahidi. Anthony Anderson, Tracy Ellis Ross, and all them. And then there was something else. And then I did Superstore with America Ferrera on NBC.
Damn.
So, you know, that was a good thing as well.
All right. Damn, multi-talented. Gosh, damn, bro. Hey, real quick.
I mean, I'm just talking about you guys, man. You guys are phenomenal, man. And I got to say thank you for what you guys are doing.
Thank you, man.
And as you continue to do, because you guys are definitely representing, you know, for the culture. You know what I mean?
Right.
For la cultura, you know what I'm saying? For la bandera, you know what I'm saying?
That's
for our
flag,
for the culture, for our people, you know what I'm saying?
Boricua and la casa.
Boricua, you know, Boricane, you know what I mean? Like, we're a melting pot. You know, many different, you know, races and cultures and whatever have you. And for you guys to create a platform, you know, for you know, to be all inclusive for everything and everybody, whether, you know, bilingual or, you know, Spanish speaking or not or whatever, but also too, just in general for just people, you know, to have a platform and to build up and to big up our culture, man. Yo, I salute y'all both for that.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. Hey, where can we find you, Fernando Marrero? Where can we find you? What are your handles?
Man, you can find me everywhere. You go on Google, type in my name, Fernando Marrero. You know what I'm saying? Type it up. You know, the first 10, 20 pages of Google, whatever. Hit me up on Facebook, you know, Fernando Marrero. Hit me up on, it's crazy because I just started the Twitter recently, maybe about a month ago. I've never really been into Twitter, but, you know, my kids say, hey, man, Pops, you need to probably, you know, try to get into Twitter and,
right,
you know,
expand
your visibility.
Yeah.
So, but no, I'm at Team PBA Forever. That's at all caps Team TEAM PBA, the number 4, ever. So at Team PBA Forever on Twitter. I'm also on Instagram at Team _ PBA. You know, so definitely, you know, yeah, so Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, IMDb, you know, Fernando Marrero, IMDb. And also my website. I have a website, www.thefernandomarrero.com. So again, it's www.thefernandomarrero.com.
Woo!
Hey.
Wow. That was great.
It was a long career.
That was a long career, man, of battles internally.
Well, but we're not done yet, baby. We just getting started.
Yeah.
Now this is Philly coming out, baby. All my people back there, East Coast, Philly, Coastville, Delaware, New York, stand up, baby.
Stand up. Wepa.
That's what we're doing, baby.
Wepa, wepa.
Hey, Fernando, you know, you fighting discipline and different, you know, discipline. Hey, what are you thinking right now about boxing? What are you thinking right now?
Is that boxing's always been, you know, an influence. You know, I'm a huge fan of the sport. I've been a huge fan of a lot of the guys that came up, you know, throughout the years, you know, throughout, you know, my generation, you know, as far as me as a kid growing up watching it, you know, from, you know, and even watching, you know, some of the guys from yesteryear, you know, before me, you know, like Muhammad Ali, George Foreman, you know, Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray Robinson, Mike Tyson, you know, Evander Holyfield is probably my favorite boxer of all time, you know, because he was such a good tactician. But
do you like Mayweather or no?
Say again?
Do you like Mayweather or no?
Yeah, Mayweather. Yeah, he's cool. You can't refute what he's done, you know, for the sport, you know, for the visibility of the sport, you know, for the, you know, his ability to, you know, garner the numbers that he's generated, you know what I mean? Like even a class, you know, of his own. I think he's a phenomenal boxer, phenomenal, you know, talent. He's undefeated for a reason. You know, I definitely would have liked to have seen him, you know, probably maybe step up in weight, you know, throughout his heyday or whatnot, and, you know, try to tackle some of the other, you know, names that were just as big as he was, you know, during that time. Right. Or, you know, he fought Oscar De La Hoya, and I would have loved to have seen him fight Winky Wright. I would have loved to have seen him fought, like, Bernard Hopkins, Jermaine Taylor.
Tito Trinidad.
You know, maybe go up middleweight. You know, I think the highest he came up was, like, 154 pounds, I believe, to fight De La Hoya when he fought De La Hoya. He fought at 147, and he's always, you know,
and Miguel Cotto.
Multiple division champion, you know what I mean, multiple weight classes. But I would have loved to have seen him fight some of the bigger names, you know, to really cement his legacy. And, you know, hey, man, like, that would have been huge. Right. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So what's next for Fernando right before we finish the podcast? What you got going?
You know, so I'm not just doing my thing, man. You know what I'm saying? Just living life, enjoying family, you know what I mean? Enjoying, you know, traveling, all that good stuff. And we just continue to build, you know, auditioning. We got some things in the works. That, you know, me and my production company, you know, C Creations, LLC, and then also with some of the people that I have on my team, we're, you know, creating, man, we're creating content. We got a lot of things down on paper, and we're just going through the motions to where, you know, we can pitch it, get it out, and, you know, you're definitely going to see some of our content. Actually, a few years ago, I was in a joint venture co-production with Loose Change Productions. Ty Lewis. There was a film that we did called Gray. It never really got pushed, but we're definitely going to, you know, push it moving forward. Just, you know, it had such a powerful, poignant message, especially given the times with social justice and social activism, and especially all the various instances of injustice and atrocities committed against, you know, black people in this country and in the world. And, you know, we definitely wanted to shed some light on that, you know what I mean? And, you know, my son was actually the lead in that movie, Jonathan Smith. You know, he's a phenomenal young talent. And, yeah, man, but we got a lot of things upon the horizon, you know, some things we can't talk about and other things that we're working on. And best believe you guys are family, mi familia. I appreciate you guys.
Thank you, man. Thank you.
Mi gente, Fernando Marrero, episodio 22, live.
Yeah. Oye, I'm gonna do the Charlo. Charlo. I say Charlo. Hey, the happy birthday, Marlene. It's a happy birthday today, 4th of July. He's like, oh, my dad, I want
to. Marlene, shout out to Marlene. Happy birthday.
Happy birthday, Marlene.
Hey, Jonathan, Dominic isn't here. You had to do, like, a lot of questions for Fernando, too. And, you know, that's all it is.
So it is.
22, episode 22, you know, Fernando Marrero, resting, and now, you know.
Oh, man. Thank you so much, Marrero.
Nah, I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Again, man, I'm just here always trying to level up, you know, saying, right, and get to that. Right. Always coming to a sense of a high level of consciousness, you know, both professionally and financially and personally and on a whole holistic level, you know what I mean? Just peace, love, joy to the world, to everybody, man. Like, if the world had more love, man, we'd be better off. But unfortunately, you know, we're definitely living in some unprecedented times, man. So, yo, just live, laugh, love, hold on to your family. You know, tomorrow's never promised, man. Amen. Love you guys. Love everybody, man. And, hey, we here. You know what I'm saying? Boricua, we do it too. We can act. We can fight. We can box. We can produce. We can direct. Whatever.
We can do podcasts.
And make new babies.
Exactly.
Everything you want, you can
shout
see
out to my godson. Shout out to Jaciel Manero.
Viva Puerto Rico, viva, you know, la cultura, you know, for the culture, for our people, man, and just for our ancestors that came before us, and even going all the way back, man, because that's where we come from, you know what I'm saying?
That's right.
Right there. That place right there, that's where we all come from, you know what I'm saying? So, peace, love, power, all that.
Much love, brother. All right, man.
Watch out. Oh. See you, man. Oh. Next time.
All right, brother.
Talk soon.
All right.
Right. Oye, eso fue Fernando Marrero. Oye, la gente que quiere saber un poco de Fernando Marrero, gracias por la gente que se estuvo conectando aquí con nosotros. Estuvo aquí con nosotros. Este episodio número 22 se trató de un poco de la carrera de un MMA fighter que estuvo peleando en wrestling y todo. Así que la gente que estuvo conectada con nosotros, gracias, un millón. Esto lo puedes ver por YouTube, esta entrevista que quedó bastante chévere. Así que, oye, mi gente, nos fuimos, episodio número 22. Oye, nos vemos el 13 con Liam B. Así que,
estamos activos. Nos vemos, obligado.
Fuimos. Uy. Oye. Nos vamos a ir despidiendo. Oye, nos fuimos del podcast live. Oye, así que no, en breve, ya tú sabes, con la pista del menor.
La pista está demasiado.
Oye, nos fuimos bien duro.